The market doesn't joke around, so why would you? Get serious. Choose Tastytrade. Tastytrade gives you the tools you need to make smarter moves. Dig into data with advanced charting, track profit accurately with order chain trackers, see risk clearly with curve analysis, and trade with low-capped commissions, stocks, options, futures, and more. All on one platform. No wonder serious traders choose Tastytrade. Join the club, genius. Tasty Trading is a registered broker-dealer and member of FINRA and SIPC. The spirit of performance defines Acura, and now it's electric. Introducing the all-electric ZDX, Acura's most powerful SUV yet. While what powers their cars may change, the energy that makes Acura never will. Crafted using the same formula that brought them electrified supercars and multiple IMSA championships, the ZDX has track-tested performance that packs an energy all its own. With a premium Bang & Olufsen sound system and up to 313-mile range on a single charge, and a Type S variant with an estimated 500 horsepower, the ZDX is everything they said electric could never be. It was built with the driver in mind, just like Acura's been doing since the beginning. We could talk all day, but the only way to experience this electric performance is to drive it yourself. Unlock the energy and order yours at Acura.com.
My mission is simple, to make you money. I'm here to level the playing field for all investors. There's always a bull market somewhere, and I promise to help you find it. Mad Money starts now.
Hey, I'm Cramer. Welcome to Mad Money. Welcome to Cramerica. I hope you want to make friends. I'm just trying to help you make a little money. My job is not just to entertain, but to explain, give you some context. Call me, 1-800-743-CBC, or tweet me, at Jim Cramer. The seven have spoken, and now we're done. Yet now that we've heard from NVIDIA, every one of the Magnificent Seven have reported, and it's time to grade them. Now, I know, I have plenty of earnings to go around. The averages can't be obscured even by the big ones. Dow advancing 48 points. This will be inching up 0.13%. NASDAQ, of course, dipping 0.32%. But we have to slice to the trillion-dollar chase and decide which companies deserve the valuations and which, if any, might be pretenders. Let's start with NVIDIA, which delivered yet another monster quarter. Amazing beat, raised quarter, powered by insane demand for high-powered artificial intelligence chips. Even better, they gave you a great forecast for the current quarter, talking about $24 billion in revenue. Wall Street was looking for around $22. Visionary CEO Jensen Huang says that accelerated computing and generative AI have hit the tipping point, with demand surging worldwide. Oh, the long knives were out for these guys in the end. And lots of people were worried that supply would outstrip demand, destroy their gross margins. It was just the opposite. As I told you last night, you need to think of Jensen Huang as Taylor Swift of business, a long-term visionary with terrific current and future products, a true powerhouse in name and in deed. I say, own it, don't trade it. Overall, I think the Magnificent Seven truly did acquit themselves well. Some of these mega-cap companies aced the report cards, getting what I can only describe as summas, at least in their orals, meaning the conference call. Let's start with the most definitive summa of all. Yes, the trillionaire that is Amazon. Here's a company that had been spending too much money to build out two-day shipping to the point where it was considered something of a slowdown story. Oh, not this quarter. Go to the head of the class, Amazon. They ended up laying off a ton of high-cost talent at headquarters while figuring out how to get your packages faster and cheaper to you. Fewer people plus quicker, less expensive delivery equals a gross margin bonanza. Meanwhile, Amazon's advertising business is on fire and its web services back in double-digit growth mode. Oh, by the way, thank you, Jeff Bezos, for ending your 50 million share sell program. And you're welcome, Dow Jones, for booting Walgreens and welcoming Amazon. Great call. How about Meta? Oh, this will be the quarter that Summa Mark Zuckerberg became cool. I know, kind of inconceivable. But have you tried the sold-out smart Ray-Bans where you can listen, talk, message, and snap pictures that go right into your Instagram? Have you been in the new Quest 3 VR headset, which to me is kind of like Jack Kirby's fourth world? Yes, that cool. Meanwhile, the core business is incredible. I'm slapping a $100 billion valuation on WhatsApp, even without fees. As we rue the denouement of linear TV, we realize that advertising is forever going to where it must go, to the people who actually want the product. And you can only do that online with the right technology. One word, inference. Instagram is the king of inference. Hence the gigantic NVIDIA bill Zuckerberg must pay to get the job done. Summa. How about Magna? My illustrious college grade. All right, that belongs to Microsoft, which would have scored Summa if we hadn't recently heard a cacophony of mixed views about Copilot and AI Gateway. They look, after an initial five-star breakout ranking, I'm not sure what to make of the suboptimal responses of late to Copilot. Given that I think it's incredibly easy to use, but maybe I'm a kind of an outlier. Either way, Microsoft's cloud business, Azure, is so hot. Just, I mean, like, smoking hot. You don't need to worry about this one. Just like Windows became the enterprise godsend to Apple's early dominance with the consumer, I am betting Copilot will eventually become the AI gold standard. We know this because CFO Amy Hood, who is so good, put a stake in the ground and told us that people love the product. If there's a tussle about how well it's being received, I'm going with Hood. She's a straight shooter. And she's got the numbers. The gripers don't. Who else? Well, Apple didn't get the highest honors, no, but it did deserve the post-earnings regrading in its stock as the company managed to do the iPhone sales while continuing to rack up excellent service revenues. China remains the issue, though. And we've seen a pickup in some things selling in China, but I don't get too excited there. What people didn't understand, what they missed, what they'll continue to miss, is Apple's Vision Pro. I know. Okay, let's put them out there. It's expensive. It's boutique. It doesn't move the needle. There are only a couple hundred thousand of them. Only Apple early adopters will buy it. The headset hurts. How do you work it anyway? To which I say, have you tried one? Yeah, I figured. Open your mind to what Masters of the Air would look like in the B-17, getting hit by flak, measurements blown by as you try to work the Norden bomb site. Real life. That's the Vision Pro. Your pictures in panorama, your keyboard in the air, your knowledge that besides Max, Apple Plus, and Hulu, the other streaming services are going to fold because they'll end up being too much demand. And who knows if you can one day call up the new Apple Sports app free and press buttons for a big Miami MLS game and be blown away. The cynicism about this product is only equaled by the sales and hard to find availability. Although we heard from the great Eamon Javers about how they have it in Russia and they're paying a lot more than that. I thought that story was that was innate demand. All right. So will it be the biggest thing? No, but it's in the right direction. Still, Apple's only an honorable mention. Why? Because China's just not so hot, and Apple's India business is still in its infancy. Can't grow fast enough. Retail infrastructure just not there. And the PRC weakness is a little breathtaking. Still, I say own it, don't trade it. But in terms of the Magnificent Seven, it was in the middle of the pack this earnings season. Alphabet's a true quandary. Two quarters ago, Google Cloud hit some sort of wall, and the whole company's numbers were just widely panned. It was a wholesale nightmare. This time, Google Cloud got its mojo back. But the far more important advertising business was a retail nightmare.
A house of pain.
Yeah, talk about hitting a wall. I mean, this was just awful. It was nasty. Because advertising was very strong for Amazon and Meta. Hey, maybe Google isn't as useful as it used to be. It was a riddle wrapped into a mystery of an enigma. The soft quarter gives Alphabet a rude general studies grade. Given all the high-powered Stanford types working out there, it's a rude awakening, isn't it? I'd like to get more positive, but that'd be hard to do when YouTube and search are both advertising-based. Nothing's big enough to make up for that, even if Gemini's a hit. I actually found it depressing. Last but not least, earning a gentleman's seat, yeah, Tesla, which, by the way, is nowhere near the trillion-dollar mark anymore, to the point where it's now weighs in below, weighs in, you like that? Couldn't resist, weighs in, again, in case you missed it, Eli Lilly. Oh, the indignance. Anyway, oddly, I want to hold back judgment for Tesla, or actually, I want to hold back the student. With a new model coming out, I just hope we don't get a dreaded gap year from Tesla. This quarter simply didn't merit distinction, so I'm not giving it out freely, given even to Elon Musk, who rivals Jensen Huang as the brightest of this generation's titanic business people, but is never confused with Taylor Swift. I don't like basing anything on a single quarter, even as the late Andy Grove, the toughest and meanest business person I ever met, said that when he ran Intel, it was perfectly legit to grade the company by the quarter. Here's the bottom line. To me, a longer-term vision is what's required. Too bad make or break is all that we ever heard during earnings season. Some of those breaks are buying opportunities, and nobody's ever made, at least not among the real winners. The good guys are always ready to play, and one day just does not matter that much. John in Florida, John.
Thank you for taking my call, Jim.
Of course,
I've
John.
I've got a two-part question on Zoetis. Okay. In Wall Street parlance, where do you put it? Is it a pharma company or something else? They also missed their last quarter earnings pretty substantially. What are your thoughts going forward?
Yeah, you know, that was a miss, and it did bum me out because I think that Kristen Peck and Zoetis are great. It is a healthcare company for animals, both livestock, but of course just companion animals, and it's a great company. I think it was one-off. I think it's a good stock, though. Let's go to Bob in New York. Bob.
Yes, Jim.
Bob.
This is Bob from New York, and first of all, I want to thank you for taking my call. I want to know what you think about the stock Micron Technology.
Okay, well, this is MU. All right, this is, you know, I like to play with an open hand. I think Sanjay Mehrotra is one of the greats in the business. The stock bottomed when he said it would bottom, which is before the turn in the actual business. I was actually more bullish than Sanjay. I told Sanjay, you got to get more bullish, man. You know how your stock acts. I told him I knew it better than he did. That was pure hubris and wrong. But anyway, I was right, and the stock is still going higher. Yes, I say when it comes to Apple, and when it comes to NVIDIA, just in case you didn't know, own it, don't trade it. To me, a longer-term vision is what's required in this market, even though that is very hard to find. Too bad this make-or-break stuff is what we hear, because there are no breaks and there are no makes. It's just great, consistent business people. Oh, man, money tonight. Home Depot, or the Despot, as I like to call it, reported earnings yesterday. You know, it's a very important company. We got to spend more time on it. I'm breaking down the numbers and realizing that it's not make or break. Then we have a make or break real estate investment trust coming on about the dividends. And then we're going to sit down with the make or break Bausch & Lomb. And you know what? I need a break from the make or break, because what really matters is finding great companies and owning them. Stay with Cramer.
Don't miss a second of Mad Money. Follow at Jim Cramer on X. Have a question? Tweet Cramer. Hashtag Mad Mentions. Send Jim an email to madmoney@cnbc.com or give us a call at 1-800-743-CNBC. Miss something? Head to madmoney.cnbc.com.
Fact. Running a business is not getting easier on your wallet. With higher expenses on materials, employees, distribution, and borrowing, everything costs more. Also a fact, smart businesses are reducing costs and headaches by graduating to NetSuite by Oracle. NetSuite is the number one cloud financial system, bringing accounting, financial management, inventory, and HR into one platform and one source of truth. With NetSuite, you reduce IT costs because NetSuite lives in the cloud with no hardware required, accessed from anywhere. You can cut the cost of maintaining multiple systems because you've got one unified business management suite. You improve efficiency by bringing all your major business processes into one platform, slashing manual tasks and errors. Over 37,000 companies have already made the move. See how you'll profit with NetSuite, and then you can think of all the ways you could be spending the money you save. Company retreat in Malibu, anyone? By popular demand, NetSuite is offering a one-of-a-kind flexible financing program for a few more weeks. Head to NetSuite.com to start saving.
When you're hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging to connect with candidates faster. Plus, 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed. Listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Mad Money. Just go to Indeed.com/Mad Money right now and support this show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/Mad Money. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Look at Bausch & Lomb go. I've been watching this eye care company ever since they brought in one of our favorite healthcare executives, Brent Saunders, as the new chairman and CEO. It did it last March. At first, the stock jumped from around 16 to low 20s, happy that Brent was in there. But then we got some spotty results. There's some supply chain problems. Worries about an overstretched balance sheet. That sent this thing down to 13 bucks. It changed at the lows earlier this month. Today, though, Bausch & Lomb caught fire, jumping 14% after the company reported a clean top and bottom line beat. Clean. And terrific results across all three of its divisions, vision care, pharmaceuticals, and surgical. Even better, management gave you a better-than-expected full-year sales forecast. So as the turnaround arrived, let's take a closer look with Brent Saunders, Chairman and CEO of Bausch & Lomb, to find out more about the quarter where this company's headed. Mr. Saunders, welcome back to Mad Money.
Thanks, Jim. Thanks for having me. Good to see you.
Well, good to see you, Brent. I'm glad there's nothing wrong with your eyes. Obviously, I had some sort of surgery there, but we're going to say that's not the focus of the interview. The focus is this seems to be the year not of investment, but the year of innovation and, yes, indeed, earnings growth. It's a big change, isn't it?
It is. And yes, I had shoulder surgery just a few days ago. But super excited about our future and the hard work we did in the last year that I've been here and the optimism I have for the future of our company.
One of the things that I love about you is you are a definitive operator, not just, some people may think that you do a lot of acquisitions, we talk about that, but your operations, you had to take over what I think were some, what you call an adopted pet business, basically, that you got from Novartis that I think it may turn out to be one of the biggest eye franchises in the world.
Yeah, you're exactly right. And you know, look, when I arrived at Bausch + Lomb almost exactly a year ago, we just didn't have the capabilities process. We had too much bureaucracy. And so we have really spent the last year rebuilding our management, bringing in great new people, promoting existing great people, and really focusing on becoming competitive once again. And, you know, most of that heavy lifting is behind us, not all of it, but you're right. One of the products we brought in, Xiidra from Novartis just a few months ago, came in with some damage, and our team really in the fourth quarter, which is the first full quarter we had it, did an outstanding job getting it back to stabilizing and prime for growth in 2024.
There are doctors who tell me that this is literally a huge part of their practice is writing scripts. Tell us what it is for, how important dry eye is, because I think a lot of people aren't familiar with exactly how prevalent this is and how much work needs to be done to keep it so that people's eyes are not dry.
Yeah, you're exactly right. About 40 million Americans suffer from dry eye. And the epidemiology here has two components. There's inflammatory part of dry eye, and there's an evaporative part of dry eye. A lot of the prevalence is driven by environmental factors as well as biological factors. So think of screen time and how much time we're spending on screens, right, or pollution and all those types of things. We actually have two drugs, and that's why we did the acquisition of Xiidra. We have a new drug we're launching for MIEBO, and that is the only drug approved for evaporative dry eye. And then we have Xiidra, which is the market leader now, for inflammatory dry eye. And so we have this 1-2 punch. We're the only company in the category that can go out and talk about the complete disease spectrum with our customers. And really, I think we are primed to, we are the leader today, but we have only established the beachhead. We have so much more we can do to drive further growth and leadership for several 10 plus years ahead. So that's really long runway here.
That's fabulous. Now, I think all the analysts are enamored, as am I, of these new products. And you've got quite a list of growth in all key franchises. But you know what? I want to go back to something that is very basic. I think you're taking share in the stuff that I use every single morning in my Bausch + Lomb solutions, because the numbers are too great for me to think that you're actually losing share or it's just kind of just done it all on price. This looks to me it's being done on revenues.
You're exactly right. You hit the nail on the head. You know, in 21 and 22, we took more price than volume. And, you know, when I came in a year ago, we focused on executing at our customer level. And what was so rewarding about our performance in 23 was the quality of the beat. It is mainly volume, even in solutions, a category that many people don't focus on. Contact lenses, surgical equipment, everything was about volume and driving more customers to use our products.
Now, how about, tell me about Infuse. Well, I'm going to give you three of them. Vizulta, and our viewers know about Lumify, but those are just showing some levels of growth that I think demonstrate that you're a young company, a young 170-year-old company.
That's exactly right. I mean, I actually put the Lumify in before this interview, so I'd look good for you. But you're right. Infuse is our daily sci-hi. We're launching it around the world, and we're launching different modalities. So we have the standard lens. We're launching the multifocal. We have a toric. We have a toric multifocal coming. And actually, in the quarter and for the year, was our fastest growing product around the world, growing 45%+. So really strong growth. When you look at contact lenses for us, the market's probably growing 7-8%. Mm-hmm. And if you adjust some things out, we were growing, and some self-inflicted wounds out around distribution, we grew about 9%. So definitely taking share. The bulk of that is coming from our daily SiHy Infuse. Great lens. I actually wear it as well. I'm a customer. And it is truly terrific. My biggest issue is it's so comfortable. I fall asleep in it and I forget to take it out.
You
which
and
is
me
not
both. I did it on an airplane the other day and I said, Alex, what happened? Because I forgot that I had them in. I got to tell you, Brent, this is like, I don't want to say it's the old Brent because you're the same guy. But when I saw you in January at the J.P. Morgan conference, I was indeed concerned that perhaps you'd have to spend more money than I'd like. I think that you are reaping the gains of what you did in 2023. This could be a good year for you, couldn't it?
It is. I mean, we put out guidance. Look, we grew 12% on a constant currency basis in 23. Our industry as a whole grows 5-6%, so double industry growth. And we just guided for 12-14% growth in 24. So we're going to do multiple years of more than doubling industry growth. That's the beginning of a real momentum and a real sign of a turnaround.
And that's what we're all used to from seeing from Brent Saunders. Congratulations on a great quarter. I think it's beginning now, Brent. And I hope your shoulder gets better fast.
Thank you so much.
Absolutely. That's Brent Saunders, the chairman and CEO of Bausch & Lomb. That's Bausch plus Lomb. Thank you for coming on, Brent. And we'll talk to you soon. Yeah, money's back at the break.
Coming up, Home Depot slipped after earnings. But is it too early to take a hammer to the stock? Cramer does some remodeling. Next.
Take your business further with the smart and flexible American Express Business Gold Card. You can earn 4 times points on your top 2 eligible spending categories every month, like transit, U.S. restaurants, and gas stations. That's the powerful backing of American Express. 4 times points on up to $150,000 in purchases per year. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/businessgoldcard.
What do we make of those numbers yesterday from Home Depot? Here's a stock that's been on a nice run, almost a tear, rallying more than 30% from its lows in late October. Most of those gains coming after the company delivered a merely okay quarter back in November. Since then, Home Despot's been gaining ground as Wall Street bets that interest rates will keep heading lower. Lower mortgage rates are good news for the home improvement space, although the yield on the 10-year Treasury has been rebounding over the past 6 weeks. Well, we had mortgage rates at 7% this morning. So did the Despot live up to the hype when it reported yesterday? Well, hard to say. Initially, the stock got hit for 4% in pre-market trading before opening down less than 2% when the regular trading started and ultimately finishing up 22 cents. Crazy trading. All right, not great, but certainly not bad either, especially on a not-so-hot day for the averages. Even though the quarter wasn't decisive, there's always a lot to learn from Home Depot, which is why I want to walk you through the aisles to get it right. First, Home Depot delivered better than feared BTF headline numbers. Same-store sales were down 3.5%. Sounds bad, right? But slightly higher than the 3.6% decline the analysts were looking for. Net sales were down 2.9%. Again, not good, but Wall Street was looking for a larger decline. Home Depot also saw its earnings shrink by 15% year-over-year, even as the earnings per share number was 5 cents higher than expected. Get that? Just better than feared. BTF. It was altogether a meh quarter, capping off a meh year, or as CEO Ted Decker put it, 2023 was a year of moderation for Home Depot. Now that we've turned to the calendar of 2024, what really matters is the guidance. So how did that look? Again, it was just okay. Home Depot is talking about 1% revenue growth for the full year, slightly below what the analysts wanted to see. And they said to expect same-store sales to decline by 1%, also a little worse than expected. But on the other hand, they're forecasting a substantially higher gross margin, although not even to generate a better than expected full year earnings outlook, which was disappointing to me. That's called a minor shortfall, though. Put it all together, and you can understand why Home Depot stock initially did sell off as the bots reacted to the earnings release. Once actual humans got involved, though, they saw the guidance for what it was, an appropriately conservative outlook from an appropriately conservative company, which wants to be optimistic but doesn't want to call a turnaround and make a cold shot. That's too dangerous. It's not the way they do things at Home Depot. While the Despot didn't tell you the turn's right around the corner, it did do something I think it's more important than anything. It raised its dividend by 7.7%. That now translated to 2.5% yield. And that's the classic sign of confidence that we look for on Mad Money. Still, if you want to know what's really going on here, you need to dig into Home Depot's all-important conference call. One of the first things that stood out to me was Decker's candid comments about the company's inventory position. Decker said that Home Depot, quote, entered 2023 with more inventory than it would have preferred, end quote, but then said they'd worked throughout the year to improve inventory productivity while delivering the highest in stock and on shelf availability rates since the pandemic. Yes. And now the company says, quote, feels very good about our inventory position heading into 2024, end quote. Okay, that is terrific. It's terrific because excess inventory is every retailer's nightmare. You need to heavily discount that stuff to get it off the shelves before you can bring in new product that might sell better, including, by the way, garden equipment. Now that Home Depot's got its inventory under control, it should have a much better time going forward. And that is why the stock is here and not here, okay? That's the difference. Decker also explained that the company invested $1 billion in improved wages for frontline employees last year with the goal of improving customer service. At the same time, the despot's been looking to cut fixed costs out of the business. Previously, they talked about $500 million in annual fixed cost reductions, which the company thinks it can deliver this year. That's amazing. Management went into great detail about what they're doing to improve the chain's bread and butter pro business, where they supply contractors and other professional builders. That includes the acquisition of Construction Resources last December. Home Depot also said it will be rolling out new offerings for what they call the complex pro, meaning contractors with more specialized needs. While the company's sales were largely in line with expectations, keep in mind they took a hit from core commodity inflation, not to mention the harsh winter weather during parts of January. Interestingly, management said, and I quote, during the fourth quarter, pro and DIY, do-it-yourself customers' performance was relatively in line with one another, end quote. Now, this is important. The big story on the do-it-yourself side right now is softness in certain big-ticket discretionary-type purchases, with management noting, quote, customers continue to take on smaller projects while still deferring larger projects, end quote. I thought that was going to kill the stock, but it didn't. It didn't. That's a very positive sign. But it's about what you usually expect, given that we've got elevated interest rates, because larger projects often require a home equity loan. But there was some optimism this could change soon. And during the Q&A, an analyst asked if there were any signs of life. Oh, man, Ted Decker hit that one out of the park. He said, quote, there's loads of life in the sector, end quote, and added that the consumers are healthy and engaged, albeit in smaller projects. At the same time, Home Depot's still navigating a tricky inflationary environment. For example, deflation in lumber and copper wire negatively impacted their average ticket price by 35 basis points last quarter. That's a lot for a big chain. But management also said that framing and panel lumber, two important categories, quote, experienced the most stable pricing level during the quarter in some time, end quote. I'm calling that positive. Now, overnight, most of the analysts published their reactions to the quarter, and, you know, frankly, they were mixed bag. HSBC actually downgraded Home Depot from hold to reduce, meaning sell, citing poor sales momentum and muted fundamentals for the home improvement market. That person better hope that this stock goes back here, or otherwise they're never going to be able to get on a bandwagon. But most reactions to the quarter were much more positive, analysts betting on a turn, especially as the year goes on. Maybe that's why the stock's only a couple of points from its high. And 90 points from its low. So where do I come down? Look, there's been a lot of noise in the interest rate front lately, with Wall Street waking up to the fact that maybe we won't get many rate cuts this year, if we even get any at all, which seemed like a possibility that dawned on people when we got the January Fed minutes this afternoon. But after this adjustment period, I still think that rates will ultimately head lower. And that's a positive for anything housing-related, including Home Depot. In the meantime, Home Depot's got a nice catalyst coming in the form of the spring planting season, which is like Christmas for any retailer with a gardening business. Besides, I'm betting that management deliberately gave a conservative forecast. They like to underpromise and overdeliver at Home Depot, which makes the stock's valuation feel more justifiable, just over 23 times this year's earnings estimates. Again, why it is so close to the high for the year. I wish it were a little cheaper, but I wish. What does that mean? Here's the bottom line. Sure, the quarter wasn't great, but the conference call commentary I found encouraging, which is why I am willing to be patient and hold on to Home Depot. Remember, you can't wait for the actual turn. You have to get in ahead of time or you'll miss the move. Management's commentary on their inventory position tells me that this is the right time to stick with the despot, and if it comes in, to do some quality buying. We're going to go to Matthew, Massachusetts. Matthew.
Hi, Jim. This is Kristen, Matthew's mother. Here's Matthew with his
Kristen. Sure.
Hi. Thank you. Hi,
sure.
Jim. I was just wondering, how do you think Baba stock will react to the newfound hype around Temu, and really where you think that Baba will go in the future?
Well, Maddie's got horse sense. That's quite obvious. Okay, here's the deal with Alibaba. Right now, the Chinese government is cracking down on actual sellers. They're really putting a lot of heat. Yesterday, this weekend, was cracking down on sellers at the opening and close. I mean, they're doing everything they can to make it so that the selling dries up. Unfortunately, the businesses really determine the stock price. But Alibaba is one of the few that I think is going to do well. So, young man, I think you're doing fine. And thank you for calling in on the show. Let's go to Trevor in Kentucky. Trevor.
Hey, Jim, quick shout out to the University of Kentucky Student Fund. My question is, with the upcoming healthcare spinoff, what are your thoughts on 3M?
All right, 3M stuck at 91. Yeah, and I University of Kentucky, I've been there. It's absolutely fabulous. Lexington, fantastic place. Too many people go to Louisville. Not enough people go to Lexington. I think you're in good shape with that one after the spinoff. But we've got to see whether they've got all of the lawsuits behind them. I am not recommending stocks that have big lawsuits, and that includes 3M and includes Johnson & Johnson. Phil in Florida. Phil.
Hi, Jim. Thank you for taking my call and sharing your knowledge. I try to make the 1020 Investor Club call daily and appreciate your insight.
Thank you. There's been some ads about what we're doing lately.
There have been.
A little internal joke there. But so what's going on?
I bought two food production stocks, something that you see in the grocery stores every day on a dip, and one seems to have risen slightly, but I was curious about what you think you recommend, hold or sell, Tyson and Hormel, TSN and
Okay,
HRS.
Tyson I think is bottomed, and I think one of the reasons is because you need protein. If you take these new drugs, the Wegovy and the Mounjaro, of course also the Zepbound, but Hormel's harder. It's processed food and protein, and I got to do more digging because right now I don't think I've seen a bottom in that stock. But thank you for the call, and thank you for watching 1020, 1030 when Jeff Marks and I do get out every day. Home Depot's management commentary tells me this is the right time to stick with the despot, and if the stock comes down, bye, bye, bye. Remember, you can't wait for the actual turn. You got to do a little buy ahead of time. Much more man money ahead, including my exclusive with, Realty Income. What's the stock signaling about the health of the overall retail sector? Is that dividend going to grow? Let's get the latest with the CEO. And speaking of retail, I'll reveal the top takeaways from my huge conversation with Walmart CEO Doug McMillan. Plus, all your calls rapid fire in tonight's edition of the Lightning Round. So stay with Cramer. Is it safe to own the real estate investment trust with big distributions here? Take Realty Income, the REIT better known as the Monthly Dividend Company, or O, because they've delivered 644 consecutive monthly dividends. Doesn't get much steadier than that, does it? Although Wall Street's been worried about commercial real estate. We'll get that. We'll drill down to that. Realty Income's been really busy of late, expanding into other countries, taking a stake in the Bellagio, acquiring Spirit Realty. But they also are consistent. Last night, the company reported basically an inline quarter, allowing the stock to rally a bit today. Keep in mind, the best reason to own this stock is what I always tell you, which is a 5.8% dividend yield, which, remember, paid monthly. But could there be some more to it then? Maybe some capital gains? Let's check in with Sumeet Roy. He's the president and CEO of Realty Income. You get a better read on the quarter. Mr. Roy, welcome back to Mad Money.
Thank you, Jim.
Okay, so let's get it straight. When I read through your quarter, it seems like that you're guiding me ever so subtly. You're thinking there could be more appreciation than just from the distribution, correct?
That's correct, Jim. I think we have set up 2024 to take into account the volatility that we are seeing in the market. But with the Spirit acquisition, our reliance on the capital markets is going to be very minimal, delivering a north of 10% total operating return to our shareholders.
Wow, that would be terrific, Sumeet. That'd be just great. Now, one thing that I want to get off right at the top, there are people who say, Jim, why do you bring on these commercial real estate people? We've got people like Barry Sternlicht, the well-known gentleman, came on the Squawk Box and talked about $1 trillion in losses. Not all commercial real estate is the same, correct?
That is absolutely correct. I think what's getting conflated is what's happening within office and perhaps some regional mall space that's going through a transformation as well. Most of real estate is doing just fine, including the asset types that we are invested in, which is retail, industrial, data centers, and gaming.
All right, so how can we be sure in an era where I'll sit down with the CEO of Walgreens or the CEO of CVS and they're telling me that they have to close stores, how can we be sure that those very solvent companies aren't going to have to close properties that you own?
First and foremost, we are in very long-term leases with both those names, Walgreens and CVS's. And the fact that they are going through a real estate rationalization, that is good for the business. It's good for the competitive business longer term. And these are companies that have continued to manifest themselves in different ways. They are no longer the pharmacy only that we think of when we think of Walgreens and CVS. They're starting to provide healthcare services out of these locations. And so it's almost expected that you know, the closing of some of these stores will be part and parcel of how they're going to incorporate these new strategies into their brick and mortar stores.
Well, could you conceivably, with the 98% occupancy, have some tenants that might want to be involved if a CVS or Walgreens closes stores in good areas? I'm sure that there are other companies that want to move in.
Absolutely. You know, these are very well located stores, as you know, and the alternative tenant list is long to be able to come in and occupy these stores. But I want to make the point that, you know, a lot of these headline numbers around store closures, et cetera, will impact, but won't impact us as much as, you know, these headline numbers would indicate. But even if they do decide to close out a particular store, the alternative list happens to be long.
Okay, good. Because, I mean, I'm showing some things from your deck, which show a Rite Aid. I get worried about a Rite Aid. I get worried about what Mr. Wentworth's going to do at Walgreens. But it sounds like that not to be, you always have to be concerned, but that there are, these could end up being opportunities for you, particularly if the leases are written at a long time ago at much lower rates.
They are. And, you know, we've been around for north of 54 years as a company, 29 of which has been as a public company. And so some of these relationships that we have are very old. Rite Aid is one that you mentioned. The first sale leaseback that we did with them was in 2001, 2002 timeframe. So I think, look, that's the benefit of being a $65 billion company, very diversified. And you know, even a Rite Aid situation, which is going through a bankruptcy currently, will have minimal impact on the overall credit profile of Realty Income.
There was an article in a Restaurant Business publication that I read that talked about how Red Lobster is struggling. I know you've got a bunch of Red Lobsters. Are there restaurants that might want to take that space if they do have to do some trimming of their properties?
Yes, because once again, those are well-located stores. Red Lobster is going through, you know, a transformation. It is still the largest seafood quick service restaurant that there is with over 700 locations. And, you know, trying to find the right mix, the right price point, the right advertising budget, those are things that they are struggling with right now. And once all of that settles out, I do think it will be a going concern, maybe not in its current form, but it should be just fine. In the event that we do get some of our assets back, given the locations that they have, given the size of these buildings, we do believe that there'll be, again, plenty of alternative tenants who would be willing to come in and step into these locations. And the other thing that we can always do is reposition these to something that's outside of a quick service concept as well. So we are not worried.
And Spirit, you've had a couple quarters almost under your belt. Everything you thought?
Everything we thought. We did close on it on January 23rd. We did announce it end of October, Jim, just like you mentioned. You know, now that we've had it for about 4 or 5 weeks, we are very happy with the portfolio. We do think that there remains some upside in this acquisition, which we hope to talk to in a couple of quarters.
Well, to me, it sounds like business as usual. We got through all the points that I care about, and sounds like I like it as much as I always have. Monthly income is for me. Sumit Roy is the president and CEO of Realty Income. That is letter O. Thank you, Sumit. Good to see you.
Very nice to see you as well, Jim. Thank you for having me.
Thank you. Mad Money's back at the break.
Coming up, Cramer takes your calls, and the sky's the limit. It's a fast-fire lightning round. Next.
It is time. It's time for the lightning round. Quick for Rob Grohl, Tony Sellers, Stephfield, when you're playing it. And then the lightning round is over. Are you ready, Ski? Yeah, it's time for the lightning round, Cramer. I'm going to start with Tom in New Jersey. Tom.
Hey, Jimmy. Hi, Tommy from Lafayette, New Jersey.
How you been?
How are you, buddy?
I'm doing well. How about you?
Oh, great. Listen,
excellent.
My question for you is, with Disney's restoring their management, the old management, I should say, is there room for this stock to run up?
Well, I'm going to address that very specifically. I think it's kind of blow your mind when we do our, yes, our annual meeting club convention. But right now, all I can say is we own the stock for the Chabot Trust, and stay tuned. Let's go to Michael in Massachusetts. Michael.
Booyah, Jim. It's been
awesome. Booyah, Michael.
Your Mad Money Show helped educate everyone at home about stocks.
Thank you. Thank you very much. That's the plan. Thank you very much.
Hey, Jim, my stock is Lunar, L-U-N-R, Intuitive Machines. And I got to say, this is a team effort with SpaceX and NASA. And they have a five-year contract with NASA to put America back on the moon since 1962.
Yeah, I have to tell you, I don't know the company well enough to opine. I will do some work. You know what's going to happen? Ben Studdle and I are going to have to huddle but good on this one, because I know that Ben knows it cold. Let's go to Dave in Illinois. Dave!
Dr. Kramer, happy NVIDIA and Ragu earnings date, my good mad friend.
Indeed, indeed. And don't forget Tony, Ragu Tony. My wife has a sense of humor, doesn't she? Go ahead. What's up? What's up, Dave?
Jim, in the cloud security space, we would all agree that Palo Alto Networks is best of breed, although some would have some doubts based on yesterday's earning report.
Yeah.
But not me. Convinced in part on your beautifully executed CEO interview with Mr. Arora. Among other players in this space, however, I see Zscaler standing out. How do you see it?
Dave, as always, you're right. I think Jay Chaudhry would tell you, look, because of the particular niche they have in the zero trust, I mean, you got to have that identification trust. They are the best. It is a good one to buy. It is down now from 259 to 213. And Dave, once again, brings a level of wisdom and patience to the product, as I call it. And I think he's right. Let's go to Jimmy in New York. Jimmy.
Kramer, thanks for taking my call. I watch your show all the time. Hey, perfect. I want your take on Super Micro Computers.
Okay, I decided Supermicro, Jimmy, get this, as my mom would say, Jimmy. This one is just too hard. I am now willing to say it. I am point blank willing to say that this one is make or break. This one is just too hard for me. And I, you know, we had them on. It was like 400. Next thing was at 1,000. Then I went to 600. I was like, I used to be an auctioneer. I got 700. I have 300. I got 500 in the back. I got 500. Sold to those who don't know what they're doing for $600. Let's go to Jack in Virginia. Jack.
Hey, Jim. I got to give you a big Wednesday booyah.
I didn't even thought it was Wednesday. This is the longest day in history. What's up?
I'm a young investor, Jim, but I just wanted to say thank you. You've been helping my family for years. You've been helping me for years now. And I can't thank you enough for working so hard and coming in doing the show every day.
Thank you, man. Thank you. I got to get up early on tomorrow. And I just can't wait to, like, parcel the NVIDIA notes. Let's go to work. Let's go to work.
Okay, Jim, I got to know. People have been asking me, is your engine revving or stalling for Ford Motor Company?
I don't know. I got to tell you, I was in my Maverick the other day, sitting here in the garage, not doing much of anything. But at least, by the way, I did have the garage door open. I'm not like that. Hey, look, Ford is like stalled. It's stalled. What can I say? It's stalled. That's the best word I can come up with it, is stall. So what do I think? Well, you know, stalled. Let's go to Tom in Virginia. Tom.
Thanks, Jim. Appreciate your thoughts on Unity Software, letter U.
Oh, I think that Unity. Okay, so now this one I know has had problems and problems and problems. I can't recommend it until it's making money. I'm sorry, even though I like the product. And that, ladies and gentlemen, the conclusion of the Lightning Round.
The Lightning Round is sponsored by Charles Schwab. Coming up, the lessons from Walmart's recent evolution. Stay modern in a market gone mad. Next.
When I was a little boy, my father would take me to see his customers on Saturdays. Pop Rep Big Mills, that's old gift wrap, scotch tape, think 3M, craft paper, ribbons, paper bags, shirts, and jewelry boxes, printed bags. Yeah, the kind that had the printed store name on it. National Gift Wrap and Box Company, he called himself, but when he wanted to sound bigger, it was International Packaging Products. Well, that was known as the vernacular of a trade jobber. He was a jobber, a wholesaler who could put in orders to mills from a whole host of stores that needed help, but were too small to place the orders on their own. Think of them like a kind of mini McKesson or Cencora, drug wholesalers that help smaller pharmacies get the same deals with big drug companies as a Walgreens or CVS, or at least something close to them. These independent drugstores are too small to go right to Merck or Pfizer. They go to middlemen. Pop's business catered to men's and women's stores, mostly, but also to the general merchant in town, the one that had mostly clothes and the accoutrements you needed to go out to work or go out to dinner. The business was never all that good, frankly. Although it beat selling gabardine trousers and gimbals or toys and board games out of the back of a station wagon, two of my dad's pre-jobber travails, still these customers were loyal, and they liked that Pop would bring them as much product as possible, even on Saturdays. Hence our schlepping around the greater Philadelphia area with all sorts of tape and paper boxes and making spot deliveries to keep retailers going on jam weekends. No one brought a bag to a store in those days. Then one day, 33 years ago, my father's business was destroyed. Or at least he knew it would. You see, Walmart came to town, more specifically to Turnersville, New Jersey, in the heart of one of my dad's best areas. He went to Walmart when it opened that weekend, and he told me that his clients were finished, done, kaput, because Walmart carried everything they did at pretty much the same quality at a much, much lower price, so low that there was no way they could compete. They couldn't compete with someone that was selling goods for lower than the price my dad's customers were paying to their suppliers. It was game over for the dress shop, the men's store, and the little department stores that dotted our nation's landscape in any town with more than a couple thousand people. I thought my father was a defeatist, but you know what? He was dead right. After a couple of years of growth, that Walmart disrupted everything. Just try to find a tiny department store, men's store, or ladies' wear place these days. There are a couple, mostly high-end, though. But my dad had boxes upon boxes of receipts from customers that just folded up and disappeared almost overnight. Pretty soon, Walmart practically had the field to itself, until one day, a new company came along without a physical presence, a company called Amazon. And as it got bigger, it destroyed virtually everyone else who was left, except the biggest, most powerful retailers, like Walmart. But you know what? Walmart itself was really late to e-commerce and didn't seem to know what it was doing. It bought Jet.com back in 2016, learned from it. Company hired computer scientists from Stanford, developed an app that wasn't even in the same ballpark as Amazon, and watched its business slip and slip and slip. Price alone could no longer win. Convenience and price, that was Amazon's ticket. But CEO Doug McMillon, who was on the show yesterday, wasn't one to lie down and take it. He persisted and pivoted, using his stores as warehouses, using computer scientists to figure out what people want. He used COVID to refine it. He got suppliers to advertise on it. Now, yesterday, we saw the payoff from that massive spend on digitization. Walmart has all the inferential brilliance of the best of companies out there, including Amazon. It has the marketing clout to come under Amazon for many items, and it has the biggest grocer in the country, right in its stores, something Amazon struggles with today. The app is real good. There's so much advertising, more than $3 billion worth. Walmart just shelled out $2.3 billion to buy Vizio because it's got so much advertising demand. And it's going to be fantastic for the business. Walmart is once again back on top, going head-to-head with Amazon and winning in many categories. Hey, and get this. It's a place that I and my daughters love to shop at. Hey, look, everyone loves a bargain. The moral. I think if Walmart hadn't woken up to e-commerce and inference the science of knowing what customers want, they could have just been roadkill like all the other smaller businesses that my dad used to rep. Oh, and Pop? He pivoted, too, deciding to go after restaurants, sketching their names on a mock bag, replacing the silly unnamed doggy bags they were all using. See, Pop knew the Philadelphians were a cheap lot, were always willing to take leftovers home. In a few short years, he was crushing it, worked until he was 92, never lacked for customers because, as he tell you, Walmart will never wreck the restaurant business. Good calls all around. I like to say there's always a bull market somewhere. I promise you'll find it just for you right here on Mad Money. I'm Jim Cramer. See you tomorrow. Last call starts now.
All opinions expressed by Jim Cramer on this podcast are solely Cramer's opinions and do not reflect the opinions of CNBC, NBC Universal, or their parent company or affiliates, and may have been previously disseminated by Cramer on television, radio, internet, or another medium. You should not treat any opinion expressed by Jim Cramer as a specific inducement to make a particular investment or follow a particular strategy, but only as an expression of his opinion. Cramer's opinions are based upon information he considers reliable, but neither CNBC nor its affiliates and/or subsidiaries warrant its completeness or accuracy, and it should not be relied upon as such. To view the full Mad Money disclaimer, please visit cnbc.com/Mad Money disclaimer.
This podcast is supported by FedEx. Dear small and medium businesses, no one wants happy customers more than you do. That's why FedEx offers you picture proof of delivery, packageless and paperless returns, as well as weekend home delivery to 98% of the U.S. on Saturday and 50% on Sunday. See the FedEx service guide for delivery information. FedEx Ground service is also faster to more locations than UPS Ground. See what FedEx can do for your business. Absolutely, positively, FedEx.